Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to the Mind on My Money podcast presented by Pinnacle Trust. Hosted by RebelGrove.com publisher Neil McCready and Pinnacle Trust financial guru Martin Palomo, the Mind on My Money podcast tackles the financial questions we're all thinking about. From paying for college to saving for retirement, from life insurance needs to 401ks and everything in between. The goal is to help you take the stress out of financial concerns and give you some tips to enjoy life while your mind is on your money. Now here are your hosts, Neil McCready and Martin Palomo.
Welcome into another edition of Mind on My Money presented by Pinnacle. I'm Neil McCready, Martin Palomo with me as always here on this Thursday, January the 12th. Today on the show, we're going to let Martin do what we talked about doing last week, and then we got off topic on something. But today we'll get on topic. It'll be a fairly short show. We both have a lot going on. Martin's got a heart out in a little bit, so we'll get moving. But we'll talk about benchmarks to look for in 2023, what to look for in the markets, what to expect in the markets and with your portfolios and that type of thing. Martin's expertise. I will sit back and keep my mouth closed in just a minute. But first, I want to tell you that I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is that number. Call it. Ask for my buddy Corey Clark. Tell Corey what Ford product you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's right to the bottom line. There's no hassle, no haggle. You get your quote, and the rest is completely up to you. You can shop it around, or you can do what I've done, what I recommend that you do, and that's hop into a Clark Ford today. And Martin, before we get started with what to expect in 2023, what can people expect when they call you guys at Pinnacle?
Yeah, man, good question. Kind of the first things that we want to do with folks whenever they call in is see if, you know, if we're able to help. And in a lot of cases, we are able to help. And in some cases, you know, it may not make sense, but that doesn't mean that I send people away, you know, empty handed. You know, I try to say, like, if it's us, if it's our side that we, you know, that there's a reason that we, it doesn't make sense to work with folks, I'll be like, hey, here's what you need to be doing to, you know, to get to a point to where we can work with you. Or, hey, you have a, here's your issue. And that's not something that we have the tools to solve, but here is, you know, the person or place that they can help you solve, you know, solve those problems. You know, I definitely don't want folks to ever have a, you know, an experience of, you know, oh, well, I'm not, you know, good enough or big enough or whatnot for their firm. And in a lot of cases, there's folks, especially the younger folks, planning is really simple. And I kind of give the milk away, you know, to those younger folks. But you know, in a lot of cases, we've had folks that are listeners to the show that call and they do have some complex issues and we're able to help out. And, that's really cool. You know, when we're able to do it, and we talked to, you know, a listener last week and I have a team that works with me on all clients. And, you know, and it's kind of funny when you get on the phone with folks and they're like, man, I feel like I'm, you know, I've listened to you for 3 years, 4 years and, you know, and it's, you know, now I'm actually talking to you and you're answering my questions. It's kind of weird. I'm like, it just doesn't seem like that to me because I guess you and I have a conversation every week and it's kind of fun and I enjoy doing it, but I'm glad we can be of service.
You know, what's crazy is when I see you in person is you sound exactly like you do here. And it's weird to me.
Well, I mean, you sound exactly like you do when I see you in person too. And I'm, you know, we don't have auto tune. Changing our voices, but maybe we should do that for a show, put some auto tune on our voices Perhaps. We can just sing the whole show. I can sing about bonds for 30 minutes.
That would be funny.
Just get a little beat going to it in the background. And
yeah, who knows, maybe.
But yeah, man, I mean, a lot of our focus this year with folks is just planning and making sure that they're, you know, that they're on track. Last year was bloody for everybody. You know, it was less bloody here. I've picked up a couple of clients at year end that were do-it-yourselfers, that just said, hey man, I've been lucky for the last several years, and this year showed me that I need a professional to help. And so that's been kind of cool, have that experience. And really it starts with us, with the planning piece. So, you know, I'll kind of say, I know probably our regular listeners are like, Jesus, man, can he say something new? But that's what we are, man. We're planners at heart. So, you know, if you don't know your roadmap, you know, we help you build the map. Then I help you build the appropriate car to drive from point A to B. And it's kind of, I try to make it boring and simple for our clients, because that means that, you know, they're probably gonna have a really successful plan. If I'm not trying to be, you know, too fancy, I'm not going to blow them up.
All right. We'll start with this. Pull out my trusty reader so I can read this. I think this is going to set the stage for the question.
All right.
Well, again, it's Thursday, January the 12th as we take this.
It's the 12th. Oh, my gosh.
This is from the Wall Street Journal. The author is Gwen Guilford. U.S. inflation eased to 6.5% in December compared with a year earlier,
yep,
marking the sixth straight monthly deceleration since a mid-2022 peak. The Consumer Price Index, a measurement of what consumers pay for goods and services, rose at its slowest pace since October 2021, the Labor Department said Thursday. December's annual inflation rate was down from 7.1% in November and well below a 9.1% peak in June. Core CPI, which excludes volatile energy and food prices, yep, climbed 5.7% in December from a year before, easing from a 6% gain in November. Many economists see increases in core CPI as a better signal of future inflation than the overall CPI. Core prices increased at 3.1% annualized rate in the 3 months ended in December, the slowest pace in more than a year. On, yep, a monthly basis, the CPI fell 0.1% in December due to sharply falling energy prices. That compared with a gain of 0.1% in November and 0.4% in October. Food price increases also slowed last month. Core CPI rose 0.3% last month, up from November's 0.2% rise, but down from 0.6% increases in August and September. So that's the current lay of the land.
That's right.
So I will ask, given that and given what you know, what do you expect in 2023?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the trend is continuing that inflation is slowing. You expect that because there's been so much of a rate increases across the board, and that's what, you know, the increases are meant to kind of choke out inflation. Now, some folks wish that the rate increases would choke inflation out faster, but you know, I think it's going to be a little bit of a slow decline back to a quote unquote normal target. Now, one of the encouraging things with where the position the Fed is in right now is inflation is rolling over, and it's a lagging, it's a lagging indicator, or it's a lagging data point. So, you know, when they're making decisions this month at their Fed meeting about, are we going to raise rates? Are we going to, you know, are we going to do another rate hike? Is it going to be a smaller rate hike? They're actually using old data. And, you know, if there was real-time data looking at this month versus last month, you're going to see that the inflation number has decelerated, you know, even more. So I think we're on a good trend trajectory to kind of get inflation normalized. And we were in such a low or no inflation period for such a long time that, you know, I'm going to kind of call it a drug that a lot of people got used to and kind of got addicted to it. They were accustomed to having, you know, low inflation and growing wage inflation, which made you know, which made you feel wealthier because, you know, you got an increase in pay, but you didn't get an increase in expenses. So you had more income left over at the end of the month. And then we had the flip-flop where, you know, wages were not going up by as much as cost of goods were going up. So that really ate into people's pockets, which slowed down, you know, spending for the general person, which is kind of gets us to where we are right now with, and, you know, in the job market, there are still unemployment is still really low. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to get to a normal employment, you know, participation rate. And, you know, the Fed may actually be able to pull off this quote unquote soft landing, which is kind of wild. They had a very low probability of being able to do it. It seems like each month they get closer and closer to actually being able to pull it off, to being able to choke out the inflation without throwing the economy into a, you know, into a massive recession. And, you know, and we'll kind of see, I think the first half of the year is going to be the big decider for, was the Fed going to be able to, do what they were trying to do. You know, and when we look at corporate earnings over the next couple of months, you know, as long as we don't see these massive, deterioration of earnings, we're probably going to be in pretty good shape. And so that'll be some of the things that we're looking at here. You know, one, is the Fed going to increase rates again? I think it's probable that we get two more rate hikes in the first half of the year, albeit I think they'll be much smaller. I think the days of the, you know, 0.75%, the 75 basis point hikes, those are in the past. We're not getting any more of those. I'd be surprised if we got a 50, but it's possible. I think we're going to get a couple of 25 or 0.25% hikes in the beginning of the year. And then I think they'll pause. Some people are saying, you know, some people I really respect are saying that they think there's going to be some cuts come in at the end of the year, which that one's hard for me to see. But the Fed does have a kind of a track record of overdoing it in either direction. So I think if there are any cuts at the end of the year,
I know the Fed says it's apolitical. Is it? Because you're gonna, at the end of 2023, let's face it, we're turning the page to what's going to be a,
I don't know, man. I mean,
a fascinating election cycle. And here's why.
And I am excited about that too.
And not to get off on this tangent at all, because we're not going to. But if you okay. look at expectations based on what Senate races are coming open, what House races are open, I think most people expect that, barring something quite volatile, that the Republicans will gain ground at a minimum in the Senate, and that will probably gain some more ground in the House based on nothing other than just the demographics of what spots are coming open. And that's before you even get into the presidential election.
Yep.
And by the way, I have a theory on that I'm stealing from my brother in a minute, because I think he might be onto something. But anyway, the fact that all that happens makes me wonder, end of year, will there be some pressure from the White House on the Fed to make a move that makes people feel better going into 2024?
You know, that's a great question. And I would be really interested to see if that does happen, because I don't know if you remember, it was pretty publicized. And when Trump was in office and he was really putting the pressure on Powell to cut rates, this was pre-COVID, you know, to cut interest rates, because he had been lifting them. Because the economy was strong, the rates had been low for a long time. And he was like, look, we need to get, you know, interest rates normalized. And he started lifting them. And Trump came in, you know, trying to bully Powell, saying we need to be more competitive with China. And he needed to cut rates to zero so we could be competitive with China. And Powell told him no. And, you know, and gave the reasoning, saying, hey, we're in a strong economy. It doesn't make sense for us to have, you know, low rates. And if we do get into a situation where we need to stimulate the economy, which happened, you know, a year later, I need to have ammunition to be able to do that. And if I take it to zero now, I have, you know, I have no ammunition. and he held his ground. You know, and I remember Trump trying to have him removed as the Fed chair, which he didn't have the authority or the power to do, because it is a quote unquote independent, you know, entity of government. So it would be interesting to see if I would expect that Powell would not cave to Biden or to any political party. And then if he did, that would make for a very interesting, a very interesting, you know, way, the way that I perceive him, because I perceive him to be a pretty straightforward, fair, an honest person, and I don't really know his politics. I haven't really tried to figure out his politics either. But it would be interesting to see, you know, how he handles that. But my gut instinct is to tell you that no, he would not. That the Fed does remain independent, apolitical, I guess.
Okay,
that's going to be my optimist, rosy colored glasses look. Well, but he's done that in the past. So
I was going to say he has a track record that supports what you just said, and I think that's
unless he's a Democrat and he just wanted to piss Trump off, and I don't know his political leanings. He keeps those pretty close to his chest.
Okay. So you had talked about some benchmarks, that you're looking for.
Yeah. So I think this year is going to be a year where bonds are really going to be a strong part of the portfolio, and for clients that are sitting in cash in their portfolio, I would say you should really take a deep look at moving, you know, a good bit of that cash into, at least in the bonds. With interest rates being where they are, you're getting compensated for the investment into the bonds. In the past, we haven't been, you know, we've had corporate bonds paying, you know, 1.5-2% interest rates. And now you can, you know, you can find some corporates that are paying 5-5.5-6% that are not, you know, that are high quality companies that are not high risk. And, you know, and that's good for the portfolio because it gives you some ballast for a lack of a better term. You know that the only way for your bonds to lose value from this point is that we have an acceleration of interest rate hikes, which I just don't see that. So I guess what I'm saying is there's not a whole lot of downside risk anymore in bonds. That all played out last year. And if you were sitting in cash in your bond portfolio like we were, you know, that was a good play. Now it's time to get back on the track. You know, the train has come past us. You know, and for stocks, in our kind of view is we're going to be neutral weight stocks this year, just because stocks could go, you know, could go down further. They could, you know, kind of rip from here. So rather than making a bet saying that we think that stocks are going to fall or they're going to go up, we're just at a neutral weight. And I did pull my hedges down in our portfolio on all of our bonds, but I left my hedges in on the stocks. So we moved the bond hedges into the bond portfolio, moved cash. And I think the benchmarks that you need to look for is, you know, if the Fed kind of slows down, that is going to be positive for stocks. It's also going to be positive for bonds. You know, and then if we see earnings in the first half of the year not really deteriorate, and you don't have to look at each individual company. I'd say people kind of look at what the S&P earnings, you know, are, and the number for the S&P earnings is $200 of earnings. It's a pretty round number, relatively easy to remember. And the way people can kind of price, if you want to get kind of mathematical, I'll give you a little bit of the milk. The way that we kind of price whether the market is, you know, undervalued, at value, or overvalued is we look at the earnings from all of the S&P 500 companies, which is about $200. And then you multiply that times whatever the forward-looking price to earnings ratio is, which is a easy statistic to find, forward PE, which right now is about 18.5. So like if we said, hey, we thought, you know, if earnings deteriorate by 10%, so that would mean they go from $200 to $180. I'm going to pull my calculator out so I don't embarrass myself. And
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So if earnings go down to 180 and we have an 18 times price to earnings ratio, so the price of the S&P relative to the earnings of it, that gives us a value of 3,240. So the S&P, you know, the number, the level that it's at is, you know, if we say, gosh, we think we're going to see a 10% decrease in earnings. If that threshold crosses 3,240, we're a buyer because that's going to be fair value. So, you know, that's kind of a little bit of, you know, I guess how the cake is made. You know, and those are some really easy things to find. Now, most people are not going to spend their time looking for all that stuff. That's why I say, hey, man, you guys take care of all of this for us. But, you know, just a couple of things to look for, you know, what the Fed does. I think we'll know by the end of the first half, what the rest of the year is going to look like. I would be neutral in stocks for the year. You know, go ahead and you can go overweight bonds. I think that's really appropriate. And I say all that and people are like, well, what does that mean? You know, neutral weight, you know, overweight, underweight. Well, it really depends on your risk factors. Like if you're to make it easy, a middle of the road, you know, person for risk, like you don't want pedal to the metal. You don't want to be driving 100 miles an hour, but you don't want to be, you know, Mr. Magoo, and you're kind of middle of the road and you'd be 50% stock, 50% bonds in a normal environment. What we say is, you know, like, hey, right now be 50% stocks and be 50%, you know, bonds. Or if you're, you know, even if you're 45% stocks and 55% bonds, you know, that's okay too. You know, and we add hedges in, which complicates the mix a little bit more. But you know, the hedges worked very, very well last year for our clients. You know, cash was a hedge in our bond portfolio, which is weird to think of, you know, cash is a hedge, but we're starting to get back to where we feel like we're in a somewhat normal environment. The only thing left, you know, to that piece is when the Fed finally decides to stop raising interest rates, then we can go to a normal stock allocation, a normal bond allocation, and just let the portfolio do its work. And then it's really all the planning is the variable each year.
Curious.
I'm gonna shut up for a minute.
When you get people that call you saying, hey, I've been doing this myself, and
yeah,
I think I finally hit a point where I'm scared of it, essentially.
Yep.
Are those people typically in trouble at that point, or have they just kind of realized that, hey, I'm not growing the way I need to grow? I mean, how much? And then, and another question, when you're talking to people like me, right, who have kind of always used a professional And almost as a defense mechanism now, when I get my statements, I don't even open them. There's like a stack of them.
Yeah.
Well, we don't. Like they come in and Laura says, don't look.
Yeah, don't look.
And because she knows I'm going to lose my mind and get upset. Because it feels like you're watching your retirement go away. I've told her the last time I opened one, I overreacted and said to her, well, we're never going to be able to retire. We're going to be working. Yep.
We're going to rest of your life.
We're going to be working the rest of my life. And I'll be honest.
I probably felt that way too.
I kind of feel that way right now.
Yeah.
I have lost confidence that we will be able to rely on our retirement earnings because I don't, it feels like, and tell me if I'm wrong, because I think this is something that a lot of people think. A lot of people feels like this is intentional. This is targeted. This is like, for some reason, people don't want people being the big bad government, if you will. They don't really want people to be able to retire.
Well, and I'll say we went on a really, really long stretch of where markets just performed so well. And I mean, I'm talking about 2009 through 22.
Yeah, a lot
through
of winning.
21, I
a
guess
lot
I'll
of
say.
Winning. And I don't mean a Trump winning. That's not what I mean.
No. Because some of those were Obama years.
Sure.
A lot of those were Obama years. And then you had Trump at the very end. And that was not normal either. But it was really the first time the Fed really intervened big time, into financial markets. And I'm not trying to sit here and say, that the Fed is bad and, there's a big bad Fed or anything like that. I think the Fed has been very useful. But it also it makes me a little nervous that if we had a Fed chairman that was incompetent, it's the wrong word, but it's the word I'm going to use. If they were not good at their job, and I know a lot of people feel a lot of ways about Jay Powell. I respect the hell out of the dude. I think he's pulled a rabbit out of a hat. But man, if we had a bad Fed chair, oh my God, what kind of damage could they cause, to financial markets? And not trying to give people, any fear or fear factors to put in. But it has been a pretty good run for stock investors. Now, it has not been a good run for bond investors. Bond investors have been, steadily going down each year. And you kind of think about, well, who cares about bonds? Well, people in retirement really care about bonds. Pension funds really, really care about bonds. And I think we're hitting a phase of where we're going to have some normal times in markets, that maybe follow a little bit more of a cycle than they have. Because, I mean, I guess the last big bull run was, call it the early 90s through 99. So it was about a 6, 7, 8 year run into the tech bubble burst. Before we had rocky roads, but man, we've been, call it 2009 through 2021. So a 12 year bull run, a double, the last bull run, and we were due for some pain, and we thought we were going to get it in, we got it in, February of 2020, but it just, man, it moved so fast that people really didn't feel the pain, because your portfolio went down. If you were all stock, your portfolio went down 30%, 35% in a 6 week period. And then it bounced back. You didn't have months of opening statements going, oh my God, when is this going to end? And really first quarter this year was the first time, this year you could open your statement and kind of sigh, have a little bit of a sigh of relief. I mean, first quarter was actually positive, across the board. The U.S. stocks were up, non-U.S. stocks were up even more, bonds were, were up a little bit. But man, I mean, still down for the year, but up from where we've been. And let me ask you a question real quick, just to,
yeah.
And this is not a trick question. I just kind of want to get your gut instinct. If I said, tell me which performed better, U.S. stocks or non-U.S. stocks for the year, what would your gut instinct tell you?
My gut instinct would tell me that it was non-U.S. stocks, but then based on the way the question was asked, I would think it was a trick question, and I would say U.S. stocks.
Well, you psyched yourself out, because it was a trick question. I think most people would have thought, because of the war, you know, in Ukraine and Russia, that non-U.S. would have performed worse, which it did all the way through the third quarter.
Oh.
Non-U.S. was a huge laggard, like down double what U.S. stocks were. And dude, in the fourth quarter, the dollar weakened a little bit, mm-hmm. and non-U.S. stocks took off. And non-U.S. stocks actually, they're neck and neck. Non-U.S. were down 17.96 for the year. U.S. is down 18.11. I mean, so pretty much tied, but non-U.S. actually eked out made up a lot of ground in the fourth quarter. You know, and bonds finished the year down 13%, man. That's, I mean, they were down 16 at the bottom, but dude, 13 on bonds is, so let's pretend that we get normal interest rates environment for the next couple of years.
Okay.
And you can get, let's say the U.S. aggregate, the interest rate on that, which is kind of the bond index, the Bloomberg U.S. Aggregate Bond Index. Let's say it pays you, you know, let's just say, I'm going to say 6.5%. I'm going to be very generous and say 6.5%. So if the next, we're down 13 right now. If the U.S. Bond Index has a interest rate of 6.5%, it will take us 2 years to dig out of the losses from the bonds. If you were 100% in bonds.
Okay.
2 years. I mean, if it's at 6.5, and if it ends up settling at 5, you know, it'll take us almost 3 years to dig out of that. That's a long recovery time.
It is.
And the difference is stocks can do it, you know, shit overnight.
All right. Let me ask you this. Your projections. Yep. I had someone in the corporate world who knows a lot more about that stuff than I do. He told me yesterday that it is his opinion that the unemployment numbers are going to be pretty scary by the end of the year, that new hires are going to go down by the end of the year, that that joblessness is going to go up, that the job market is going to be much tighter, thinks it's inevitable. If I tell you that, and if that proves to be true, does that change any of your projections?
It really doesn't. And here I'll give you my why. Almost all of the job cuts that we've been seeing are white collar cuts.
Okay.
They are, you know, your tech jobs, big tech firms. You've seen it in a couple of the banks here lately, but it's mostly in trading and investment banking. You know, really, really high dollar jobs. I'm not seeing it in middle America in reductions. Okay. Now I'm not saying that, and where we are right now is we're not even at what they would call quote unquote full employment. Like we are overemployed, if that's a word, relative, because full employment is like 4% and we're not there yet. You know, we're still under that. The reason that I think it's not going to have much of an impact for markets like through the rest of the year is, you know, the firms that are going to cut people out, a lot of them have already started doing it or have done it. So you'll see that trickled into their earnings reports over the next couple of quarters. But unless revenues go down, that's a net positive for earnings. And it's awful to say that. So if you have the same level of revenues, but you cut out, you know, big salary expenses, your net profit number is going to be a higher amount. So it doesn't, you know, to me, it doesn't have that impact on an earnings recession, quote unquote, that could come into play. And then if the Fed has overdone it and let's just say that unemployment does rise, let's say it rises to 6%, and the Fed cuts rates again a little bit to stimulate, you know, I think that the pendulum will start swinging back the other way. And that's all saying we are now in a phase where we have a very active Fed that has not been, you know, pre 2008, were not this active. And I know they're trying to, I guess, normalize is not the right word. Like smooth out, you know, bumpy economies with what they're doing. But you know, I think the employment factor is less of a factor than interest rates.
Okay.
But I could be wrong, man. I've been wrong before.
We'll end with this. Here's the theory that I was told.
Okay.
You know, the mainstream media, and I think even the people who lean left will begrudgingly admit this, the mainstream media has been gone pretty easy on the Biden administration so far. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'd say so. Except for now, I'm learning that there's classified documents that they found in his residence.
So suddenly they seem to be going aggressive on Biden on this classified document thing. And the theory is that Biden was supposed to have announced by now that he was not going to run for re-election.
Yep. And he is not. And he's saying he's going to run, right?
As of today, he has not done anything other than say that he is running.
Yep. Okay.
And I am wondering if this is the beginning of the media, meaning the mainstream, turning on him because of A, let's face it, he's going to be an old man running for re-election.
This is true.
Yeah, well, he'll be what, 82?
Yeah. Yes.
He already is the oldest president. So obviously he'd be the oldest person to run for election in our nation's history. And secondly, as it looks more and more, like Trump will not be the guy with the Republican Party. Certainly not a slam dunk like it looked like it was a year ago.
Correct.
They worry that Trump, that, you know, Biden can't beat another candidate, a younger, more normal, rational candidate. And then there's a part of me that wonders if this is the Democrats going, you know what, for all of Biden, Biden's not extreme enough. Like they want to go for it, you know, go for the pack the court, things of that nature, things that Biden has just not been willing to push for. So people say, what do you look for in 2023? I am, the story politically that I'm watching the closest is Joe Biden and whether he runs for re-election, whether he gets pushed out. I thought it was interesting that there was so much emphasis put on Gavin Newsom's speech the other day. So that's what
I'm
kind of,
and I missed that.
He won re-election and he gave a speech the other day. I guess it was his inauguration speech or whatnot. I don't really know. I have avoided mainstream media for the most part. I've avoided most all media for about the last month or so. I really have. And it's been, man, it's been like
beautiful.
Well, it's been incredibly healthy. I had like a little moment mid-December when I was like, oh, you know, this is you're letting stuff get to you too much. And I just kind of stopped consuming it and boy, been a difference. Anyway, that's what I'm kind of watching for. I mean, just, you know, just Newsom gives a speech. Newsom's pretty radical. Newsom is hard left. He's Justin Trudeau of California. And I'm fascinated as you are to see how that would resonate in a national race, not in a California race where he can go win in California because he's going to win these massive amounts of votes in Los Angeles and San Francisco and things like that. How does that resonate in Texas and Ohio and Wisconsin and Nevada and Florida and Georgia and North Carolina? How does that message resonate in those states that you have to perform well in if you're going to win a national election?
Yeah. You know, right. And it will, I think that'll be really interesting. It would be interesting to see, but I just, again, I don't know if Biden runs again, and unless the media absolutely destroys him, it's probably going to be Biden versus DeSantis, if we're being honest, right?
That those would be the betting favorites. I mean, if you were, I mean, look, I don't
see is there lines on presidency? I'm sure there is.
Oh yeah, for sure. I don't know where you'd find them right now, but yeah. And I think as of today, I think if you're betting on who the Democratic nominee is, you'd have to bet on Biden.
Yeah.
Until he says he's not running. It's difficult for me to imagine that the Democrats would primary out a sitting president running for re-election.
Yeah. Unless the media absolutely destroys him.
Yeah. It makes it where he can't run, which might not be the goal. We'll see.
It's going to be interesting.
All right. You got a hard out. Let's get to it.
I do, man.
Real quick, tell the people how they can get in touch with you at Pinnacle before we go.
Yeah. Old school phone line, 601-957-0323. You can email us at info@mypinnwealth.com.
All right. For Martin Palomo, I'm Neil McCready. We'll be back with you guys next week for another edition of Mind of My Money. Until then, take care.